Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
So, okay, here we go.
Hey guys, it is Podcast Rob.
James Hatton.
And we are here for another fun-filled episode of Something in Review.
In review.
We need like a clapboard or something, I'm realizing. Yeah. Something in review. And scene.
Yes, this is where we take a thing, a movie that we may not have reviewed otherwise. And since this is very particularly James Hatton Appreciation Month, I got to pick the movie.
Still?
It is. It's still April. As a matter of fact, this is coming out on... Let me see. Yeah, look, my birthday's tomorrow.
This is the week of your birthday, I believe.
It is. So I got to pick a movie, and the first thing that Rob said to me was, we're not doing Last Starfighter, are we?
Wait, what? Your birthday is the 17th or the 16th?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, my birthday is today. Because I have all of my recording.
We'll edit your birthday out in post.
My birthday is the 16th, isn't it? It's because on my Google Calendar, I have all of our recordings on the Monday.
On that's Monday, right? To post the Monday night, so they're
exactly
good for Tuesday.
So I was nice. Like, oh, it's tomorrow. Anyway.
It's tomorrow so, today.
Today, mother. So happy birthday to me. That said, when Rob said I get to pick the movie for this month, because we sort of oscillate back and forth, and I said, cool, I'll do like a classic me movie, like a movie that I hold dear to my heart. Really, and his first thought was, it's Last Starfighter. No, it's not. I thought about it. It was on the list of like five movies. This, Tron, Ocean's 11. And so we went with Willy Wonka. Because again, it's not the sort of movie we generally talk about. It's appeared a couple times like when we're doing lists and things. But it's such a big part of my childhood that I don't think I've ever heard like your full-on opinion and thoughts other than how we both despise the Tim Burton one.
Oh, the one with Carol Channing?
Yes.
So fucking terrible.
I'm deaf in this ear and a pirate.
That's coming a terrible Carol Carter. Channing, too.
That's my Johnny Depp.
Oh, it's a great Johnny Depp.
There you go.
That's a terrible Carol Channing.
I got no Carol Channing work.
So this is the 1971 version.
Yeah, I always forget that movie so early. I always think it's later, and I think it's just because I was born in 79. And so it was a movie that, it was, funny enough, the first film, and this is why it's so important, it was the first film I recorded on a VHS tape. We had just gotten a top loader VHS, and we had gotten like four blank tapes. I was told one of them was mine. I don't know how old I was. It was probably like six, maybe seven. And Willy Wonka was on the Disney Channel that night. And so, lo and behold, I was like, I want to record that. They were like, you're just asking to record the first thing. I'm like, no, I want to record that. And I recorded it. I missed the first, I don't know, 3-4 minutes of it. Right. So, until later in life, when somebody bought me an actual VHS copy, I had never seen the first 4 minutes of the damn film. It's still weird. It's still weird when I see the first 4 minutes. Because as far as I'm concerned, the movie starts with, who can take a rainbow?
Right.
That's my first sort of oomph with this film. Well, where do you stand? Where'd you come in with Willy Wonka?
Well, I mean, it came out in 71. It came out the year after I was born. So when I actually started watching it, it was probably around late 70s, early 80s. By then, it was actually getting an uptick. Because it didn't really do good when it was released in the theaters. But it wasn't until like the 80s that it started getting this kind of cult following, because it was constantly getting replayed on TV. So it earned a big following through that. So it wasn't until that kind of resurgence that I kind of got on board and started watching it. I love it though. It was one of the movies where I liked it as a kid, and then as I, you know, got into my teens and then young adult and everything, it was one of the movies that completely made me fall in love with Gene Wilder as an actor.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's quintessential Wilder. If you're going to go do a greatest hits of Wilder, it's got to be on the list.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, since you mentioned that song, this movie introduced that song. That song wasn't chosen to be part in this movie. The song came from this movie.
And I didn't know that until I was doing the research for this episode.
Yep.
Because I originally thought like they took a Sammy Davis song, because it's one of those things that anything that happened before you were born sort of all happened at once.
Sure.
So Willy Wonka and Sammy Davis Jr. both singing the Candyman, you kind of have to figure out through context which one came first. And my assumption was, you know, Sammy's been singing since the 40s, 50s. Like, this had to have come, he had to have done it first and they borrowed it. Nope.
You know, it was actually released on 45 in 72.
Yeah, the story goes that he wanted to be the Candyman character.
Mm-hmm.
And they told him that they, you know, they decided against it because they didn't want a big name in there. They didn't want anybody to sort of overshadow the rest of the movie. And Sammy Davis, like, 71? Sammy Davis was a motherfucker in 71. Oh, yeah, he was all absolutely over the place. So they told him no, but he kept the song. Super neat.
Good stuff.
Yeah, I didn't know the song. Sorry, go ahead, please.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I looked at the movie. It cost $3 million to make. Like
in 71.
70, I know it's $71.
No, but I'm saying $3 million in 1971 is like $100 million now. I mean, that's a lot for a movie in 1971.
I guess I was thinking about that backwards. Yeah, you're right.
But yeah, it only made four. It didn't do very good in the theaters at all. With the exception that Roger Ebert gave it a perfect 4 out of 4 stars, calling it the best film of its kind since The Wizard of Oz.
I can't argue that much.
I really can't. Yeah, when you look at it in the company of a movie like Wizard of Oz, you absolutely can't.
I just threw up other movies that came out, top movies of 1971, just to sort of give a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
We got Clockwork Orange, The French Connection, Dirty Harry, The Last Picture Show, Harold and Maude, The Omega Man, Fiddler on the Roof. But let me
every movie that you listed is like a home run almost.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, this is a good year for movies. But just interested in looking, I wanted to see what other movies cost. The Andromeda Strain, which came out that year as well. That one has a budget, that was 6.5, and that was cutting edge science fiction. Yeah. It was double the cost. It was a Crichton movie, but interesting. I wonder how much Dirty Harry took to make. That was almost an indie movie, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll pull up that Wikipedia on Dirty Harry. $4 million. So we're in the right wheelhouse. It seems that that's sort of around the wheelhouse for a big budget film, but still big numbers. I mean, they had to build a fucking chocolate factory.
Yeah, right?
It's one of my favorite fun facts about Willy Wonka, and it changes, once you know it, it sort of changes the way you watch the movie. The kids knew nothing. The kids didn't know that Gene Wilder was going to pratfall. Go ahead.
I thought I read somewhere nobody knew that Gene Wilder was going to pratfall. Like, the reaction of not only the kids, but the band, had the band just kind of... Like, because nobody... I don't think anybody who was an extra in that scene on the other side of that fence knew what was going to happen. It wasn't just the kids. Yeah, I think 100%. Everybody in that scene, from what I read. And that's amazing. That's still such a, like, an iconic fucking entrance scene. Good stuff. Continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. It's wonderful. But yeah, when they walk into the chocolate factory, they didn't know. Even as far as the scene where Charlie walks in and gets yelled at by Wonka. The famous yelling, you get nothing. Charlie didn't know that he was going to go so hard at him. And that was because the director wanted to make it as pure as possible and have these reactions be like as they were in the moment. Don Siegel and Robert DeLay directed and produced. And so he wanted these pure reactions from the kids. So he told them nothing. They lived in constant fear of monsters and chocolate.
That's awesome, though.
Oh, it makes next time you get a chance to watch the movie, like, it's such an interesting experience to just look at these faces on the kids and see that they're going through shit.
Well, and not only that, but also the wonderment, too, when they get into these, like, when they get into the, like, the creation room, you know, and they see all the weird things that he's trying and testing. When, like, I don't think the kids had even seen, like, the whole, If You Want to View Paradise room.
Yes.
With, you know, the big chocolate river and everything. They didn't see any of that stuff when they went in there.
No.
And I don't think they were prepped on any of it, because I thought I had read somewhere that they tried to make as much of that set edible so that when the kids went in there and they were basically told, hey, this is a fucking candy factory, you know, eat whatever you want, that they could literally just go up to almost anything, pull it off and eat it. And it, like, you know, it wasn't going to poison them or anything like that. But yeah, because I don't even think the parents had an idea. When you see them go through that room and they come on the other side of that giant staircase, those are all pretty legitimate reactions. It's actually pretty cool.
And that scene alone, there's something wonderful about that scene in that it obviously is just, it's a big room full of candy. And I think it was every kid's dream to be like, oh my God, I wonder what that mushroom tastes like.
Yep.
But to the same, the more you pay attention to it, the more it's also a factory. There's like stonework creeping around the edges. There's so much care and detail done to make it seem both like this weird little world, but also this weird little world that's clearly in a box.
Yep.
That I've seen this movie so many times at this point that now when I watch it, I'm only watching for the background. I've gotten it to the point where I can lip sync the goddamn movie, but sure. I want to see, like, wonder what those Oompa Loompas over there are doing, because they're clearly going to be doing something. They're on screen.
They're playing Galaga.
Like, is that machine moving in a way I've never noticed before? What right. actually is on the wallpaper? Because there's just so many little cool details. And I found it very interesting that if you do look in some of the background scenes, you see that it's this sort of warehouse area, which would in some way maybe detract from the charm because it's not a real world. But also, it adds something because it's still just this factory.
Well, because we know from the outside it's a factory. It's in the title of the fucking movie and the chocolate factory. So it should be very industrial. And the fact that he kind of turns it on its head and makes all that, you do kind of lose sight of that. And I think almost that's kind of the point, that they want the viewer to, on the first 5 to 10 watchings of it, just be you're drawn in all the craziness. And then you start doing like you do, and you're like, cool, we're looking at the chocolate river, but I'm looking across the river, and you can almost see where the rivet seams are on that wall in the back there that they painted kind of teal green to blend in with the plant life. I mean, that, like you said, that level of detail is almost brilliant at that point.
Yeah.
The only other... So, when they're doing the Wonka Wash... The Hasawakaha now as their
yes.
their
wow,
on
good.
The thing, you like that with all the bubbles coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to believe again that the actress who played the parent and Charlie had no fucking clue what was going to happen, and that Gene Wilder was the only one who did, because it completely sold that scene as like they're putting their hands and feet up to the big fucking sousaphone horn as the soap bubbles or the soda bubbles are pouring out of it, and Wonka's just up there like conducting, just covered in foam, going with the whole thing.
Playing it deadpan.
Oh yeah. The only time in recent memory that I have seen natural reactions like that. If you have not had the opportunity to, and this is as much you as our listeners, on YouTube right now, you can watch the first episode of Relics and Rarities. which is D&D style, kind of Critical Role type show. Deborah Ann Wall is the DM. A bunch of people as her players. Our friend Xander is one of them. But they start off in this curiosity shop. And they move from the curiosity shop to the table where they all sit and play the game. I won't say anything more, but the reveal okay. of the gameplay area was fucking sheer brilliance. And again, it was one of those things where Deborah knew what was going on. The other people didn't. And when it happened, they were all just like, no way! It was like that kind of cool, like when they walk into the first factory room, that kind of look on their face. And it, you don't get that unless nobody knows what's going on and it's a surprise to everybody.
And I think bringing up something that's sort of more laden in reality is sort of the only time you ever see those natural reactions. Because half the time, you know, stare at this tennis ball because we're going to CGI in the factory later.
Right.
So it's only in things, you know, not to mention just Xander and things we know, but it's not like that show or The Quest where it's, nope, hey, look, there's your castle.
Yep.
That you get those full on real performances, for lack of a term, but those real reactions. Because it's only in reality can you now, reality shows where you need to build a real object for a real person to have a real emotional thing too.
Yep.
You know, it's a little different when you're watching a Muppet thing or a Labyrinth because, yeah, the creature's real. But there's also a dude in a black turtleneck right behind it.
Yeah, exactly. So this I thought was kind of interesting. It was ranked number 74 on Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments.
Ah.
For the boat scene.
Yeah, I mean, then again, another scene where it's stated where everybody had no idea how bad it was going to get.
Except Gene Wilder, because he's unaffected by any of it.
And ranting like a madman.
Such. Well, he eventually starts ranting. The whole very calm in the beginning and then going to complete panic mode. Just the manicness of it all and how quickly he could kind of flip almost this bipolar kind of personality where he was very cool and then just raving lunatic. Was amazing.
So good. The Wonkatania song is the only song in the movie that was in the book. Everything else, all the Oompa Loompa songs, completely sort of invented for the movie. We'll get more to that in a minute. But that's the only one that took from the book. And I recently, about a year ago, reread both Willy Wonka and The Glass Elevator. And definitely doesn't come across the way it does in the movie, in the book. It's much more, there's no earthly way of knowing. Dee, dee, dee. You know, it's much more sort of charming. Yeah. It's, hey, we're lost and we don't know where the fuck we're heading off to. But all of the songs, nothing in the book comes across as ferocious. And so that they took that song in particular and turned it into this creepy, scary dirge is such, it's such an interesting choice for them to do it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I did, go ahead.
So, I'm reading all through this on some of the people that wanted to be part of the movie and some of the people that they had also considered.
I had the same section up and that's exactly what I was going to bring up. Way to be on point.
I love the fact that John Pertwee was one of the people that they had considered for Willy Wonka. He's the third Doctor.
Oh, so right.
I thought that was very cool. And I want to say it's his son, plays Alfred in Gotham.
Ah, interesting.
He's a Pertwee. So if you ever look at the third Doctor and then look at the guy who plays Alfred in Gotham, you're like, yeah, I can definitely see the resemblance there.
Yeah. Peter Sellers is on my list. That
he begged him for the role.
And I'll say
Fred Astaire, Joel Grey, All the Monty Python actors, Chapman, Cleese, Idle, Gilliam, Jones, and Palin. But they were determined not to be big enough names for an international audience.
Every name on that list would have been in a different movie, but I think the closest one to Wonka that we got, the Gene Wilder Wonka, would be Peter Sellers. Like, probably. I love the Gene Wilder version. I would love to see the parallel dimension that got the Peter Sellers version.
See, just, I can't look at Peter Sellers without thinking Pink Panther movies, and I don't know that I would have been able to separate the two.
Of course, and he probably would have played it a bit more shticky.
Yeah.
Less dry, but I don't know. There would be something wonderful about a Peter Sellers Willy Wonka.
And, you know, the other thing that I didn't know until just a couple years ago, like you said, that whole entrance of his where he comes out, that was Wilder's idea. And he said he would only accept the role if that was the way they wrote his entrance in the movie.
Which, I've caught that note too. He read that scene and like got this idea in his head to do it that way. Which is such an interesting, like, he brought that to them and said, this is important to me. And that scene is super important, as we've spent minutes on it already.
Yeah, yeah.
That he came in with that scene, like, in his head, this is the Willy Wonka reveal. And he had this sort of deep understanding that, look, if we do that, they'll ask, they won't know what's coming ever. And that's such a, right. It's such an interesting.
They'll never know what's real and what's a lie.
Yeah. So neat.
It's a great take on it. Absolutely a great take on it.
Interestingly enough, Roald Dahl, who wrote the book and a bunch of other wonderful stories, James and the Giant Peach, things like that, hated it. After it came out, would not even, they were going to make the Great Glass Elevator. He wouldn't let them. He pulled back all them's rights. And after the other abomination that came out from Diz, we'll probably never see the Great Glass Elevator, which is okay. Because I said I reread it. It's vaguely racist. It's not even vaguely racist. It's fucking racist.
I was looking up some stuff about this movie. Yeah, because there's a lot of fan theories that the kids represent the seven deadly sins.
Oh, sure.
And then there was another one that I read that it's an article on Real Rundown called The Horrible Truth About Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And it's basically like, yeah, everybody thinks it's this cool story about this guy who makes chocolate with these cool little people. And it's really just like a treatise on evil white CEOs and slave labor. And I was like, that's a little deep to be.
Yeah.
He's got a few points in here. Like, I read through it. I'm like, it's, okay.
Well, I guess you have to take it from the perspective of, do you believe that Wonka saved these people from the vermicious canids? Or is that the story he tells people, and perhaps them, to keep them under wraps?
Well, and that's the thing. Once we have the cane scene, again, we don't know what's real and we don't know what's bullshit.
I'm with you.
Snozwangers. Vinicius Knives. There was something going on the side there, Wonka.
Cane, that movie, unendingly quotable in weird places.
God. It's like the entire movie is one just 2-hour long quote.
Yeah, it's one of those movies because, you know, it's in my head so deeply that a moment will come up and you'll just look over and go, you know, I'll just do a Veruca line, like, don't care how I want it now.
That was a bad egg.
At least Mr. Salt got what he wanted.
What's that?
Veruca went first.
Such a great movie.
So,
Violet, you're turning blue. You're turning violet, Violet.
Oh, we can just keep doing this. I have not seen. Yeah, I want to see the DVD, the anniversary DVD. As a matter of fact, I think I might own it. I'd have to see whether I own an anniversary version or just like a DVD version. Because they do a commentary with the grown-up kids. Peter Ostrom, oh, yeah? Michael Balliner, Julie, Dawn Cole, Denise Nickerson, and Paris Stemmen.
So rumor, a lot of stuff that I had read was that Veruca and Violet apparently were getting into fights slash arguments slash jealous challenges over Charlie Bucket. And like he didn't want anything to do with either one of them. But the actresses were like kind of vying for his time and attention. I think I want to say this is like Peter Ostrom's only movie role.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if he had another like commercial or some other small role, but he's like a dentist now. The last time I ever checked up on him.
A vet, I think.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, because he, yeah, he's a actor, 1971, veterinarian, 1984 to present.
It's this movie got PTSD from this damn movie.
As of January 2018, he still receives $8 to $9 in royalty payments every 3 months.
Jelly of the Month Club, Clark. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
That's funny.
I mean, that's a weird thing. I you know what? I would love to do some research on how residuals have changed over the years because, got to imagine, the checks that kids get from modern movies. I don't know. Let me pick a random kids movie. Let's say, who's the crazy drunk chick who was in Herbie?
Lindsay Lohan.
Like, do you think she gets bigger checks than that for Herbie?
Couldn't tell you.
And that's what I'm saying. It's like a super hard thing to have a wrangle on. But
I mean, probably because it's not 1971.
Right, but that movie was also nowhere near as popular as Willy Wonka. And I have to imagine that she gets bigger checks for Herbie than every 3 months getting, you know, a 10 spot. Probably. Makes me sad. I want to send him a 10 spot. Just a...
So here's a little interesting thing that I read, too.
Sure.
Soon after Ostrom returned home from filming Willy Wonka, his family acquired a horse. And while Pete was interested in the horse, it was the animal's veterinarian that left a lasting impression on him. And that's kind of what got him into grooming horses and working at the Delaware Equine Center in Pennsylvania. And he visited California later on to kind of test the waters and see if there was any interest in returning to Hollywood. And he said, yeah, no, I'm going to pursue a degree in veterinary medicine.
Huh. Go him.
And that's where it went to. Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
That was an educated educator. fun fact.
No, stop. Don't.
This, I've literally just read this fun fact and it scares the balls off of me. So the bees, and it took me a second to remember where in the movie there are bees and they're in the gum machine, the full meal. They were actually wasps. And
in the machine that's making the honey.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, Paris Themen, who's Mike TV, was apparently a troublemaker on set, and he released them into the fucking studio and, in fact, got stung in the face because of it.
Fucking serves you right, Mike TV.
Good God. That's horrifying. As someone who has, a distinct bee and waspophobia, that's goddamn terrifying. The last fun fact I have, and this is one that I read years ago. So, the Chocolate River, which I always just assumed was just brown water or like some sort of, you know, concoction, actual chocolate and cream, like you mentioned before. So from what the story goes is that first couple days of shooting, All is well. Last couple days of shooting,
the all Chuckle is not well.
The Chuckle River hath turned.
Yeah. It is now chocolate sour cream.
Just imagine how funky it got.
Yeah, curdled milk.
Because you know they're not running that generator to pour that sumbitch all the time.
Yeah, and I'm sure it wasn't even kept to, you know, it was outside of the 4140, I'm sure.
Sure.
There was nothing keeping that river cold would be my guess.
Under studio lights and the whole thing?
Ha. Fat German kids drinking it.
Bratwurst fingers dipping in there.
Augustus, stop.
Save some room for later, Augustus. So that's, I mean, that's Willy Wonka in a nutshell. I don't have sort of much more to say. I took that videotape. I wore it through that videotape. Actually, I still might have it. I have a box of like 10 VHS tapes. And I still might have this one. And it had, let me think. Shortly, let's go back into the deep recesses of my brain. The Willy Wonka videotape that I used to have as a kid also had the Saturday morning reveal. Do you remember? I think we've discussed this before during cartoons. That like the weekend before the September cartoons would come on, they do like a Friday night. Hey, these are the cartoons you're getting next week. So I think I had like an episode of, you know, like Kissy Fur or like what's the blue dog? Damn it.
Not Blue's Clues.
No, that's way later. No, there was like this blue old hound. I'll have the name while we talk.
Huckleberry but, Hound? No.
No, it wasn't Kissy Fur, but it was something like that. Here, hold on. Old cartoon. Blue
so while you're looking that up, dog. You're mentioning about VHS versions of Willy Wonka. There were two, when it was released in 1977-1999 for the 25th anniversary edition, it was a double-sided DVD. One side was a widescreen version, and the other side was a standard version. Now, from what I'm reading, the standard version was still widescreen.
Okay.
But it was what's called an open matte print, where when they converted it to widescreen, they had painted mats that went on either side of the image to give it the widescreen look.
Huh.
So in the standard version, they kept the format, but got rid of the widescreen mats. So you would see stuff on the edges of the screen that the viewers were never intended to actually see because the mats covered them for the widescreen, and in the standard 4x3, they were never on picture anyway. That's actually cool. I'd actually like to get a look at that.
I would love to see that. The cartoon, as a note, was Foofer, not Kissy Fur.
Foofer!
You remember fucking Foofer.
Now that you say that, Foofer!
And the last thing, which is the one I was trying to get to, the other thing on that videotape is the battle for Endor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. With,
not the holiday special?
No, the one with diabetes. What's his name? Wilford Brimley.
Diabetes.
You know what I mean. You know exactly who I meant, too. You know, diabetes.
I did. I couldn't think of like. I could picture the fucking bristle brew mustache, but I couldn't think of his name.
Cocoon. Jamie Hyneman. You know what I mean.
Good so stuff.
What are your feelings, thoughts, history, dreams, hopes about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? 1970s version only. We will not discuss Tim Burton. You'll be banned.
We really won't.
You can leave it underneath the comments below or just wish me a happy birthday. Or on the Twitter or the Facebook or all the other places Rob's going to tell you about.
Somethingcast.com.
That's the one.
You can find all of our stuff there. Our Twitter, our email. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. All the fun podcatchers where all the hip, cool podcasts are.
Got what you need. And also, please let us know what movies you want us to review. It could be stuff that we have already said how much we enjoy. It could be stuff we've already said how much we despise. It could be this really weird artistic bullshit movie that you saw that you want us to absorb and try and figure out. I literally just saw one of those a couple days ago.
One of those which?
It was an art house horror movie.
Okay.
And so after the end of it, I went online and I'm like, all right, let me see what other people thought of it. Nobody has a goddamn clue what this movie's about. I've never seen this before.
What was it?
It was called... Oh, shit. Why did I start this conversation without remembering the name of the movie?
I don't know.
The premise is these two girls...
You were talking about it on Facebook, too, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Nope. It's not coming to me. That said, while we both pour through my Facebook very quickly, it's about these two girls who are on the lam, running from the cops, having stolen a bunch of drugs. They go to this childhood home. Braid is the name of the movie. As a note, the reason I don't remember the title is because it has fucking nothing to do with what goes on in it.
Okay.
But so they go back to this their old friend's house who lives in this crazy huge mansion to hide out from the cops. And... they used to play a game with their old friend, which was make-believe. And this girl, for some reason, went crazy, and she still lives in the make-believe game they played, where one of them was always the doctor and one of them was the daughter, and it was this weird sort of house game. But the movie is so disjointed and does its job in trying to confuse you that by the end of it, you go, wait. Huh? And lo and behold... I had concocted a theory about this film and I posted it up on Reddit of all things and said, hey, I see a bunch of people confused about this movie. Here's my take. To which people went, that's pretty smart. I said, yeah, I think that's it. And it's like the cheapest fucking they were dead the whole time answer anyway that I was like, whatever, okay. This movie's stupid. So if you have one of those movies, you can also comment and let us know and we'll watch it.
Can I end this with some foofer trivia?
Please do.
Foofer. The guy who did the voice for Foofer also did the voice for Fred Jones and Scooby-Doo and was the voice of Megatron in the Transformers franchise.
Oh my god, he's a really famous voice actor.
Foofer.
Frank Welker.
Yep.
That's Frank Welker was Foofer. And Megatron.
Exactly.
Which one do you think he leads conversations with? You might remember me from Foofer.
You can't just say Foofer. You have to say it like they say it on the show. Foofer.
So with that, we thank you all for listening. We will see you next week with another fun-filled adventure in Something Land. I'm James Hatton.
I'm Podcast Rob.
See you guys later.
Later.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.